Oh, well, lovely to meet you, Siobhan.
Me too, Trisha.
Delighted to be talking to you about your experiences at Greenham. So perhaps I could start with, how did you come to join Greenham?
At that time, I had a bread delivery van that I had converted into a live-in van. And I worked with a friend of mine, and we were both creative women, and we were both cooks. And we used to do pop-up restaurants around the place with live music. And we worked with a circus and traveled around, and we were just, you know, alternative people. And so we just heard about Greenham through the grapevine. I'm not sure which particular grapevine. So many things have happened. It's quite hard to remember. Yeah, I think we just heard about it through the grapevine. And so we took our vans to Greenham, and we used to provide teas and coffees and things. Sometimes we went without the vans, sometimes. And then the big time that we went was when it was 10 million women for 10 days. And we made great big sweetie jars of blackberry jam where we were parked up, and we had loads of flour and lots of ingredients and things, and we had and we set up a cafe, and we sold food very cheaply. We made fresh bread every day, and we had this little cafe. And then people complained that we were too expensive, or that we shouldn't be selling it, or so. Two things happened. One, I went off to, I think we were at Green Gate, but I might have gone off to another gate, and there were a group of women there, and I'm not sure if it was me that suggested, let's sing something. So I knew this song, and then there was another woman there that knew the same song. So we both started singing and teaching the song, and then everyone was singing. It was one of those lovely feminist songs about loving the Mother Earth and the river flowing. And then she and I sort of connected over both knowing this song. She was there with her daughter, who was probably about 9, and the daughter's friend. So they were probably about aged 8, 9, that sort of age. And quite often, children of that age, they just would live to do something like work in the cafe. These two girls wanted to come and work in our cafe. So it was just too complicated for them to deal with all the money and the change, and it was busy, you know. So instead, my friend Alison and I got a chalkboard, and we wrote on it all the things that it had taken to kind of get us there to be providing this cafe. The fact that our mums were looking after our children, that we'd, you know, made all the jam by hand, that, you know, all the things that had brought us to that point. We wrote that on the chalkboard, and then we said, we trust you to give us what we need to carry on. Can I have a little cry?
Of course.
Because as soon as we did that, people just gave money. Nobody said we were being too expensive. Nobody complained about it. And the girls ran the cafe for us. They were in seventh heaven. They were just having such a fabulous time. Alison and I were busy cooking bread, scones, whatever we were making. And it was an incredible success. And it was actually the only time that we ever made a small profit from being at Greenham. And it was a really, it was an important thing to do, to be there, because it was cold, you know, it could be really cold at Greenham. And, well, you know, because you were there, so it was very emotional. Women came and were deeply touched by their experiences there. And having our cafe there was like a little bit of home. It was homey. They had hot drinks and lovely things to eat, and it was all made with love. So the woman that I met singing, I lived in Bristol with my young son, and she lived in Cornwall, I think, at the time. But she then moved to Bristol, and we became really, really close friends, really good friends. And then out of that friendship, I'd lived in Morocco. The father of my son is, my two sons is Moroccan. And so I'd experienced another culture. And then we met some African musicians. And then she went to Senegal and the Gambia and became very keen on drumming. I was always very keen on dancing. And after that, she and I set up a participatory intercultural music event, which became very, very popular and is still running to this day. So it was called Tribe of Doris. And if we hadn't met at Greenham, there would never have been this fantastic, even though I say it myself, it was a fantastic, we didn't call it a festival then, we called it a summer camp, an intercultural summer camp. And we had Indigenous teachers from many, many, many different countries who would come and share their culture through music. And as we had met singing at Greenham, that was always just seemed like such a magical fruiting of our friendship. And I told somebody that little story. I said to them, without Greenham, there would have been no Tribe of Doris. So we set up Tribe of Doris, I think, in 1991. Mm-hmm. It's still going now. Neither she nor I run it anymore, but younger people run it.
Yes. So. Do you still sing the song that brought you together?
I probably don't even remember it now. It was one of those goddess songs, you know.
Yes.
Earth is our mother. But I probably don't remember it now because I've done so many other things since.
And how long were you at Greenham?
So we used to go pretty regularly because we lived in Bristol, so it wasn't far. You know, we used to sort of pop up when possible. But when it was the 10 million women for 10 days, yeah, we were there probably for about 2 weeks.
Yes. And tell me about that. What was it like to be with 10 million women for 10 days?
Well, it was a symbolic 10 million women. Mm. So we were running the cafe. So we weren't particularly doing actions. I think I have got a photo somewhere of me on the fence, at the fence. So I think when we weren't, because we had these live-in trucks, we would always go in the trucks when we went to Greenham. So we were always, whenever we were there, we were always making teas and herb teas and drinks and things. So I can't say that I was there in, you know, in the cold, being having abuse shouted at me by the soldiers or anything like that. That wasn't my experience of Greenham. My experience of Greenham was more the delight of being with all these women who cared like we cared, you know, who had put themselves out like we'd put ourselves out, you know, because it mattered, because it was important. And to feel connected, not just to the women around us, but to the women from the past. I can have a little cry again. To the women who'd come before us, you know, and to the women in other countries, and to the women who were affected by these things in an indirect way, you know, all across the world. So that's what I really remember from my experience there, from feeling really connected.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think the decision was taken for Greenham to become a women-only camp?
Well, I'm pretty sure it's because pretty much even these days, whenever you're in a group with men, they just take over. There's just an assumption that they know how to do things best, or that they know how to do things. So, and I think it was, so I think there's something to, you know, that was something to do with it. And then I think it was, I don't know if they consciously did that to sort of empower women, but it was very empowering that it was women only. And also I think, if I can refer to my own life. So when I was working with my friend Alison, we were involved in setting up the first conference about non-animal circus, which we did in Hay-on-Wye. And we had a huge big marquee, and we needed security. And Alison and I decided that the best security would be us two women. So we had these sort of drunken farmers that would appear as the pub was shutting and things, shouting and wanting to know what the hippies were doing there and stuff. And then we would just sort of talk them down. And because it was two women, there was never any, there was never sort of the aggression that there might have been if it had been blokes on the door, mm-hmm. you know. So I think perhaps that was an underlying hope.
Yes.
The fact that it was women only would mean that there wouldn't be this sort of testosterone going on through the, and that women could be, to this day, if I see a helicopter going overhead, I still do think.
So just
describe
what you're doing for our listeners. Just describe what you're doing.
I'm putting my first two fingers together and my thumbs together lower down to make the shape of a vulva with my hands. And we all used to stand there when the helicopters went overhead at Greenham. We used to, all the women used to stand there with our hands up in the air like that. So they would look down and they would see the shape of the vulva. And like I said, to this day, if I see a helicopter going overhead, I still do that.
And so at Greenham, what sort of relationship did you or the other women have with the men around you, the military, the police, the residents?
Well, I do remember being at the fence a few times. We would tie ribbons on and we would make sort of little artworks on the fence. The soldiers would come, or I don't remember now if they were soldiers or if they were just the UK military police, but anyway, the guys inside, they would come over and we would just try and chat to them as human beings. That's what I remember. I never remember having any abuse or anything, not personally. You know, I know there was aggression, but I don't remember any of that. I just always remember trying to be friendly towards them and speak, you know, appeal to their humanity. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you are very creative and artistic. So if you were going to represent Greenham artistically, what would it look like?
I think maybe I would have a little bit of that chicken wire fencing. And then I might make something warm and cozy looking, but with a very solid centre that kind of wrapped around it. Because we had this feminine energy, but it wasn't soppy. It was solid. So I think I have a little cry again. I don't know why I feel so emotional, because it was a long time ago. You know, that's it was a big thing in my life, because it led to 20 years of running the festival, which was run by women. And we had men that worked with us, but the festival was run by women, you know, which was very, very unusual in those days. Yes, I think I'd have a little chicken wire enclosure with that's maybe a military symbol inside it. And then I might knit something fluffy, but with a sort of solid center in it, holding that space. And then a little dove on a kind of bendy piece of metal, little dove kind of flying out of the enclosure. I might make that now.
Good. Oh, well, please do send us a photograph if you decide to do that. It would be lovely. So what do you feel is the legacy of Greenham within the peace movement?
Well, I think she's like an ancestor. She's like an ancestor that we know went before us, that we can lean on, that we can draw on the energy of. I can't say that I've been, I mean, obviously when there were the CND marches and things and I was younger, I used to go on those. But I can't say that I have actively been involved in the political side of it, more in the feeling empowered as a woman to do whatever it is I want to do without needing to force my way into anything. I felt so. I can't speak about the broader peace movement. I can only speak about myself and how, knowing that we could do that, knowing that it was successful, and knowing that the things that women do are so easily forgotten about. I think it's and for me personally, meeting that friend and then doing the 20 years of Tribe of Doris, it did have a very powerful personal effect on me as a woman, not yet specifically as a woman, you know. And I think I don't really know about the Peace Project, because I recently organised. I didn't want to have a protest. I wanted to have something for something. So I organised a site-specific human art installation, which was a tree wedding where 60 women came and we symbolically married the trees. We had a beautiful ceremony with some ritual, and it was very beautiful. And when people said to me, "Ooh, why aren't you having any men? Why is it women only? Like, that's so old fashioned, you know, men like to wear dresses too." And I just said to them, "Don't you know about Greenham Common?" And then young women would say to me, "Oh no, what was that?" And then I would speak to them about it. And I felt a little bit heartbroken that yet again, something that was huge and had such a positive long-term impact had been forgotten about.
Mm-hmm. But I definitely see that as a continuation. Mm-hmm. And it's really powerful to do a women-only action. And then we did have men there, but they were all in the background supporting what we were doing. Mm. And it was so important.
So how well do you believe the legacy of Greenham has been relayed down through the generations?
Well, broadly speaking, probably not that well, but individually speaking, I'm sure all women who were involved in Greenham, it's had a massive effect upon their life, and the people they met, there wasn't anything like it, was there? I mean, to have a woman only huge action like that went on for years, and the women, you know. I know we'd had the suffragettes previously, but people didn't really even know about the suffragettes that much in those days. You know, that's obviously come much more to the fore in the last 40 years. All these things have changed. But at that time, so I think everybody that was there, they would have passed that legacy on, you know, mm-hmm. in conversation and in their life, in their actions, you know.
So where do you think it is then that the suffrage movement has been so well celebrated, whereas the peace movement in Greenham in particular have been largely ignored?
Well, I think because the suffrage movement was seen to have affected absolutely everybody, all women were affected by that, because it eventually it gave us the vote, you know, and also it gave men who hadn't been able to vote the vote. Whereas the peace movement is perceived as something alternative and different, and there would be many, many women who would never give it a second thought, who would think that it had nothing to do with them, and that we were being anti their brave soldiers and all this sort of thing. So I think, you know, the suffrage movement, nobody can argue with that. No woman would want to argue. No woman would want to say, "Well, I don't want to have the vote." But I think the peace movement, despite how fundamentally important it is seen as something, could be seen, you know, it is seen by some people as something a bit wacky and weird and, you know, a bit left field.
Mm-hmm.
And also are seen as something socialist, you know.
Mm-hmm. So how do you think you were portrayed by the media?
Oh, well, I mean, we know about them, don't we? Yes. I mean, this is nothing to do with Greenham, but I myself was involved in a newspaper story to do with my mother. And the absolute barefaced, bollocking lies that they wrote about me was such an incredible eye-opener. So, and it's almost the same thing. Until you're sort of touched by something personally, you don't necessarily, you know, people don't necessarily understand what's going on. So, I mean, yes, the media wrote undoubtedly appalling lies, you know, and it was all the same time as the miners' strikes and all the terrible disinformation that was being put out, definitely let down by the media, who are paid to lie. That's their, you know, their owners. They are the mouthpiece of their owners, and their owners are billionaires, so who make money out of the military industrial complex. So why would they be interested in writing anything supportive about the peace movement?
What do you think the headlines ought to have been expressed for Greenham?
In my dreams.
In your dreams, yes. What would you like the headlines to have said?
Brave women stand up for peace. Women come together to protect our safety. Those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. And so earlier on, you were talking about the young people who helped you with your running your cafe, which sounded an enormous success. Were there many children at the camp when you were there?
Well, I have a fantastic image in my head of a lesbian mum from Bristol. I can't remember her name now. I'm not a lesbian myself, but I used to go to lesbian bridge night and play bridge with these women. So I knew quite a lot of lesbian women in Bristol. And I remember her sitting on a log, breastfeeding her baby on one side and breastfeeding somebody else's baby on the other side. She was this fantastic image which has never left my mind, sort of super powerful goddess woman. I don't remember there being lots of children there. I think there were some children there. I don't particularly remember taking my son there. Maybe because he was a boy, I didn't take him. But I think boy children were welcome. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a problem with taking boys.
Did you ever consider taking him?
I think I sort of just enjoyed the woman-only time, because at that time, I'm not sure, my husband was in Morocco. I'm not sure if he'd come to England by that point. So I was pretty much a single parent. And I later became a single parent again when we split up, when my son was seven. So I think I quite enjoyed just being able to have some time with other women and be using another side of myself, you know, because, of course, being a single parent is very all consuming.
Mm. And so what do you think it's important for the young generation now to know about Greenham?
Well, that it happened, that it was a women-only event, that men came and supported us, they brought food, they looked after the children, they did all the support work. And so it had a, so I think young people need to know that it wasn't just this powerful peace movement, but that it also had this big knock-on effect, you know, that because it was women only and lots of women had children, then the men had to look after the children. The men had to, you know, be the caring, nurturing, dealing with all the taking them to school and all, which sounds quite normal these days, but it wasn't normal in those days. So it had this huge knock-on effect, you know, because women came from all over the world to be at Greenham. They didn't just come from England and Wales, of course, from Wales to begin with, but women came from all over the world. And so it was like a beautiful thistle head or dandelion head. Can I have another coin?
Because I do feel it was so really important in many ways, not just for the peace movement, but all those men then that went away, you know, and had to learn how to be, you know, a caring parent. And a beautiful thistle head that sort of blew its spores out, a dandelion clock. And it just travelled everywhere. And women were inspired all over the world to do actions and to feel empowered and to feel, yeah, young people need to know that they haven't invented everything, that there were, you know, that the ancestors are important, very important, that our foremothers and forefathers, you know, are important. And that, you know, sometimes my son, who's 40, he says things to me as though it wasn't his feminist mum that brought him up and put those ideas in his head. And I just have a little chuckle to myself. And I think, well, I'm so glad you think those things. You know, I don't need to tell him that it was me bringing him up that enabled that. You know, I'm just glad that he's a feminist. That my grandson will be a feminist. Look.
And how old is your grandson?
Look, I want to show you this.
Oh, that's lovely.
Can you read it?
Just read out.
I'm going to show you this because
it's a lovely T-shirt.
It's a sweatshirt for my grandson. And it says, boys will. Fancy ones. Let's get Disney to make a Greenham film.
And how old is your grandson?
He's 10.
And does he know all about your experience at Greenham?
The thing is, I'm a bit of a wild and wonderful grandma anyway. I'm always going off travelling and doing things, you know, and he's very, very proud of the tribe of Doris. He's enormously proud that I've done that because his friends go to it and love it. And we haven't quite got to that, you know. But I might show him the film of the tree wedding. And then when I show him the tree wedding, that would be a good opportunity to talk about these things. I think with children, in a way, they need to come to you with something. So if he starts talking to me about, say, a march, or if he's in town, or and he go, because his dad doesn't take him on marches or anything, so for various reasons. But I mean, I think if he was to bring something up, then I could carry on talking to him and drop things in, you know, because it's quite hard to sort of drop things on top of children, if you see what I mean, you know. But once he sort of shows an interest in something, then there'd be plenty of opportunity. And my son did ask me, bless him, my son, who's 41, he asked me to write something about my life, because he said to me, you've done so many things, Mum. I know, I want to know about them while you're still here. So that would be a good chance to write about Greenham.
Yes. So what other memories do you have of Greenham?
Lovely sitting under the trees in the early morning, having a cup of tea. Used to love an Earl Grey tea in those days. And chatting, making plans to do things. Lovely. I loved it when we were all at the fence, making a ring around the fence and all putting our little artworks and ribbons and photos of our children.
So what kind of artwork? Were you making things?
I just remember tying ribbons in the shape of a heart and things like that. And I think, yeah, we would put pictures of our children. We would put photographs on. I remember it being quite joyful, as well as a profound sadness that we needed to be there. I do remember it being joyful. I remember lots of singing and just lovely random meetings of
random meetings of women that I don't see anymore, you know. Mm-hmm. Just everyone moves on with their life, don't they?
Yes. And did you meet women from all around the world?
I do remember meeting them, not that I stayed in touch with them, but I do remember there, I always remember there being Spanish women there and Greek women. And yeah, I always remember meeting women from other countries. But you know, life goes on, doesn't it? It was very important at that time in my life. And then, it, as I said, you know, it had a profound effect upon my life. Very, very empowering. And my 20-year festival came out of it. And then just always feeling that we could, you know, I was brought up by a single mum. So I think I just always knew that women could do whatever they wanted to do. And I always found it quite bizarre when people somehow thought we couldn't. Do you feel that it's had an ongoing impact on the peace movement?
I do. I mean, I wasn't at Greenham, but certainly having worked on the Greenham project and listened to so many stories, I just think it was the most amazing thing that happened at that time. And I wondered if you think that today's young people taking action have anything they could learn from Greenham?
Well, I think they could learn a great deal about the non-violent approach. I was very distressed being somebody who went on the Bristol marches during COVID lockdown against the protest bill, the anti-protest bill. I was heartbroken that it became violent, because then it was so easy for the press and even our own mayor, you know, to eradicate our cares. And I do think that it's very, very important to have a non-violent approach, which of course Greenham was the epitome of, you know, very important. I think John Lennon, wasn't it, who said, you know, once they know how to deal with anger, that's why they rile you up, but they don't know how to deal with peace.
That's a beautiful quotation. Is there anything else that you would like me to have asked you, or you would like to say?
I don't think so, but I would just like to say something about the peace vigil in Bristol, because I think that the peace vigil thing, I think that's been indirectly, I'm not sure how, I don't know if Barbara used to go to Greenham or not. She's an art activist. She started the peace vigil after the marches because she was also very distressed about the violence. And so that's happening. And I'm sure there are lots of other non-violent actions that are happening. And my tree protest was a non-violent action, specifically a pro something as opposed to a against, you know. I think that's important.
So your message to the young activists would be then?
To be for something, be for peace, as against to against violence, be for peace.
Maybe that's an appropriate point to close, is it?
Be yes. For peace. It is. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you so much. It's been really delightful to speak with you. And so thank you for so eloquently and passionately expressing your time at Greenham.
Yeah, thank you so much.
May you continue with the wonderful work that you are doing.
And you too, Tricia. You too. Lovely to have met you.
Lovely to have met you.